welcome back, and thank you for tuning in. RedIceCreations.com is our website. My name is Henrik Palmgren from Sweden, and we are talking with Barbara Peterson from Farm Wars today. Barbara lives on a small ranch in Oregon in the U.S., where she raises geese, chickens, goats, and horses. Yet this rural lifestyle is currently under attack at the most basic level. Federal regulations, Agenda 21, and the corporate takeover of the U.S. food supply with Monsanto's invasive GMO technology is designed to make it next to impossible to raise animals and grow organic food. Today we are going to have a somewhat laid-back discussion about genetically modified foods, how to grow your own food, raise animals. We are even going to talk about some recipes, so sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome, Barbara. So nice to talk with you today. Thank you for coming on the program with us and sharing some of your time with us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, great to be here. It's good to be able to share.
You bet. I mean, I've heard about your good work over at farmwars.info for some time now, so we're glad to have you here. It's going to be interesting to dive into this and see, you know, kind of the work that you've been into in the last few years, I guess. I mean, maybe as an introduction, we can talk a little bit about when you started up the website and what some of the reasons are why you actually got into this in the beginning, Barbara.
Well, Farm Wars is kind of a labor of love. It started because I started delving into the issues of our food supply and the genetic engineering issue involved in it. And the reason I started that was because my mother, I used to take care of her, and she was in her 80s when she developed. It was like a poison oak rash. It was horrible. It started on her calf, and I just looked over at her, and she was just scratching and just till she was bleeding. And I thought, what the heck's going on? So she had insurance, so I took her to the doctor. And doctor upon doctor, they gave her antibiotics, didn't work. They gave her stronger antibiotics, and it didn't work. Then we went to all sorts of tests, a skin specialist and everything. And finally, the very last test, she walked out of there with a prescription for vaginal fungal cream. The doctor said, we don't really know what it is, but try this.
All right.
I said, yeah, so we hopped on down to the pharmacist, and we got her vaginal fungal cream, which, of course, didn't work. So I started doing research, and I realized, because I had been pretty much an active person, doing a lot of endurance riding, horse endurance riding and everything, so, you know, I knew how to take care of myself, I thought. And we found out that food, I mean, like, what goes in comes out, okay? And we found out what's happening is the genetic modification of our food supply gives us all sorts of pesticides, and the main pesticide is glyphosate. And I didn't know what to do, so I got a goat. I started milking the goat. I said, well, I'm going to get her away from milk. I guess that's got RBGH hormone in it or something like that. So I started feeding her raw goat's milk, raw vegetables, steamed, things like that, and guess what? It cleared up.
Right.
So I didn't even apply that to myself. I thought, well, she's just got an allergy. And sure enough, about, several months later, almost about 8 months or so, I developed this tiny little rash on my leg. And I started scratching. I said, oh my goodness, this is what my mother had. And it got to the point, and I was still eating processed food, and it got to the point where it spread all the way up my leg, all the way across my shoulders, down my other leg. It was oozy. It was horrible. I mean, I was so desperate, I couldn't sleep. I would just lay there in bed just scratching and itching and trying not to scratch, and it was so horrendous that actually one time I got up and made myself a bleach bath and hopped in it. Anything to stop the itching. So I decided to go ahead and do what I did with my mother, and I was, quite frankly, I was afraid to eat because I'd started really studying the genetic engineering issue, GMOs, and I was afraid to eat. I didn't know what was GMO. I didn't know what wasn't. I knew that the food I ate prior to 1996, because that's when I was doing all of my endurance riding and my athletics, wasn't making me sick. I mean, it was okay. You know, I was eating the same thing. So what changed? Well, I found out that that's approximately when our stores started being flooded with GMOs, and approximately 80 to 85% of the processed foods on the shelves are GMO. So I experimented on myself. I'm real good at experimenting on myself. So this is what I did. I stopped eating. I lost 60 pounds in a short period of time. I was afraid to eat. I'm on well water, so I was drinking water, I was eating raw fruit and vegetables and things like that and studying. And then I started clearing up. And it took me several months to finally clear up and get rid of this horrible rash. So then I started introducing things that I knew to be GMO. And each and every single time I introduced something that had been genetically modified, the rash started coming back. So there's certain things, you know, that when you look at the labeling, and I got to be a real, you know, label watcher, had to understand what the labeling terms meant. They're hiding a whole heck of a lot. So I started looking at the labels. Sugar, that's made from genetically engineered sugar beets, unless it says pure cane sugar. They're working on genetically engineering the cane, but it hasn't been put on the market yet. Anything with soy in it, genetically engineered corn, genetically engineered in corn and soy are in just about everything.
Yeah.
So basically, my diet now, and I have been rash-free now, since 2006, just by eliminating all GMOs from my diet. Some people said, well, maybe it's celiacs, maybe it's from the wheat. No, that's not true, because I can eat non-genetically modified wheat and I don't have a problem. I also experimented on my geese. It wasn't really my choice. It was my choice, but I really didn't want to, but it happened. I went to get corn from a local supplier, and I said, well, it's local, it's probably okay. Most people out here don't do GMO. Well, come to find out, the corn that I got was the local supplier. What he did was he ran around and got corn from a whole bunch of other suppliers, which were GMO. So I spent a season, and I fed my geese over the winter. I have to supplement my goose food. I mean, right now they free range. All my, you know, my animals free ranging.
Yeah.
So I supplemented it with this corn. Now that season when this is the time of year right now where they start getting together and mating and laying eggs and that kind of stuff. So I had spent all winter feeding them this GMO corn. Come to laying season, and they were fighting. They were aggressive, overly aggressive. Geese can get aggressive, but these were overly aggressive. They would not sit a nest. I actually had one goose successfully give me two eggs, and the babies were deformed, and they died. The next season, I stopped. I cut out every single bit of GMO food that they had. Switch to whatever I could get that wasn't GMO. It didn't matter if it was organic, as long as it wasn't GMO, because I was, organic was so spendy, hard to find. And out here, I'm very rural. And they returned to normal. The next season they laid, I have 17 geese. And when they lay, I have eggs like crazy. And the next season, I was back to normal. Had all my eggs, and they were good. And it doesn't appear to be any really bad residual effects. They seem to be normal, so they pulled up out of it. So there is hope. But this is not just, so it's affecting everybody in ways that we don't even know, because there's no cause and effect relationship that the companies have worked very hard at not showing. Because cause-effect relationship, if you see something happening. You don't really know because there's all kinds of different, you know, different things that could have affected it, could have done this. And that's what the companies take advantage of. Because when they can say, okay, well, we don't know what it was. It could have been the wheat, or it could have been this, or it could have been that. You don't have any proof. I have proof. I have my own personal proof. I know what I did. I know how I tested myself, and I know how I tested my animals. But when you go out into the public, a person will have a problem with their stomach. So they'll go to the doctor. The doctor will not normally, now it's starting to get a little bit different. Some doctors are actually admitting it. But normally, you go to a doctor and you say you have a stomach ache, they will give you some sort of antacid or something like that, or they'll diagnose you with some sort of a syndrome, and they will not connect the dots to it could have been the GMO food you've been eating.
Yeah, sure.
Because that's simply not the program, and they will not do it. The cause and effect relationship, they say we cannot connect the dots in that. They cannot connect the dots in that because it's been a carefully orchestrated program of keeping those dots unconnected.
Yeah,
it's I'm just trying to, at this point, Farm Wars, what I'm trying to do with the site is to kind of raise awareness in sort of a playful way, you know, by using, I take my farm animals and I, you know, do graphics on them. You know, I've got one with a helmet, you know, on hiding behind a bush, you know, stay away from GMOs, you know, that type of thing. I'm trying to get it a little bit playful because there's so much serious stuff, and it is extremely serious subject, that, you really have to approach it, at a level that people will not automatically, you know, just bounce off and go away and say, ha, no, I don't want to hear that. Because it's hard to hear. It's very difficult to hear that we're surrounded, completely surrounded by the enemy, basically. Genetic engineering is all around us. It's, at this point, the best that I believe we can hope for is enough people to rise up and just reject it, just completely ban it from their own lives, so that the market goes down and then the farmers realize it's not going to sell, and then the farmers start getting rid of it and realizing that once you get in that trap, and it is a trap, because once you open that bag of seed, you have agreed to the technology use agreement. You have agreed that you're going to enter the system of glyphosate on and in the food, and anything natural gone.
Yeah.
That's the system. And the BT, which is the bug bites, plant bug dies because the pesticide is engineered inside the plant. The HT, which the herbicide tolerant, which means you've got a little plant sticking up there and they spray glyphosate all over and kill everything else. Now, what do you think happens with that glyphosate? That glyphosate is on the plant, the plant, and gets soaked into the plant. And that plant goes into the feed for the animals, and it goes into our food supply, other means. Now, this, it's scary. It's got to stop. It really has to stop. And the sooner it stops, the better chance we have to remediate our soil and to get healthier food. Because you can't keep spraying the soil with poisons, and you can't keep putting artificial fertilizers on the soil without grave consequences to that soil. And the soil is the lifeblood. If you do not have good soil, you do not have good food. I don't care what it looks like, but a lot of this food, it's the same as taking a piece of cardboard, cutting it out to look like a corn, painting it to look like a corn, slapping it on your plate and eating it.
Yeah.
That's all the nutrition you're going to get out of it. Plus, you're going to get the added benefits of glyphosate toxicity. And yes, it is toxic. No matter what the company says, it is toxic. Independent researchers have shown it is toxic. And you're going to get the other added benefit of having a genetically engineered organism changing your DNA.
Yeah.
Every time you eat it, you're eating a transgenic organism. It doesn't stop being a transgenic organism once it hits your stomach. And the bacteria has a little habit of transferring DNA. That's what it does. It's not going to stop doing that just because Monsanto says so.
I mean, how many studies have not been done now on the health effects of GMOs, from the mice with the tumors to some of the animals that won't even touch it because they smell that it's not food, that it's something else on there. But it seems that it's, I mean, you're touching on that a little bit, that there seems to be an issue here with people's basic level of interest in what they're actually putting on their own plate, and this idea that it's easier to put the head in the sand. And you know, I'm not speaking down necessarily to anybody, but there are a lot of people out there who are still, I mean, it's astonishing to me, but they are not aware of GMOs. They don't read the labels. They don't check what's in it. They don't, as you've done, you know, do the process of elimination if something's wrong with them and really get into it in that way. So there's a huge obstacle there alone, where you have a lot of people who are continuously supporting the industry unknowingly because of this idea that they don't even want to look at it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's an issue of being so busy. So what you do is, and I worked, I'm retired now, and I worked for the Department of Corrections and for 10 years. And I was very, very busy. I was working double shifts. I was, you know, it was 16 hours at a time. I had to rely on prepackaged food. I couldn't always, you know, eat the way I wanted to. So, but at that point in time, 1986 to 1996, they weren't really flooding our food with GMOs. They were doing all sorts of other, you know, things that weren't very good, but at least they weren't genetically modified. And after that, I mean, you simply can't eat the way you used to. And people are stuck. They're stuck in a rat race. They're stuck in a grind. They get up. They take an hour, 2 hours, if you have kids, whatever, to get ready to go to work. You don't have time. Okay, when I fix my food, if I'm going to have a grilled cheese sandwich, this is what goes into my sandwich. First, I have to get the milk that I have milked from my own goat. Okay, first I had to buy the goat, then I had to set up the space for the goat, had to make sure about the goat's feed, had to make sure exactly how to milk the goat. I had to learn how to do that. Okay, so now I milk the goat. Now I take the raw milk in and I prepare my own cheese.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And when I prepare my own cheese, and I make my own bread. So it's not a simple matter. It all takes planning. It all takes learning it, and, you know, figuring out how to do. And when you're working a 40 to 60-hour week, you're barely getting home in time to get your chores done and flop in the bed just to wake up the next day and do it all over again for 5 to 6 days a week.
Mm, yep.
So all of that, the system that we're in is not conducive to doing your own. So this is why it becomes extremely important to start getting with the local people around you that are starting to do some of the same things, starting to raise awareness and starting to, you know, make things like, I'll go to the neighbor and get vegetables because she grows organic veggies that I might not have had time to do this, you know, the season before. If I can't, you know, if my chickens aren't laying, then I'll have to go to somebody else in the neighborhood that I've talked to and found out, no, they're not using any GMO. If I run out of goat's milk, there's another gal that's local, and she has several goats, and I've talked to her about GMOs, and since I've talked to her about GMOs, she has gone completely GMO free. So we have to start working together and making our own little, you know, communities where we can get this food that will help us to be healthy while, if say you're still working, you're still going to a 9-to-5 job, and you can still be healthy. Because quite frankly, if that's what you're doing and you're going to the store and even depending on USDA organic to be healthy, you're not going to be healthy.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
Well, exactly. And I mean, in that regard, specialization is good. That enables us to buy and sell or you know, trade and barter, basically, so that we don't have to do everything ourselves. That's what society used to be like, right? But the life people are born into at this point and do not attempt, usually in a way, to break out of is this prepackaged, you know, kind of lifestyle. This is how it is, and people just kind of adhere to it and usually, unfortunately, falls into the mode of being the victim as opposed to changing it and saying, all right, you know, I need to sacrifice certain things here or exclude certain things to be able to begin life in a direction that I want to. And you know, everyone is pushed into the city, so there's, like, you know, a lot of issues that comes with that. But I mean, you're right. It's something that we have to re-examine. I mean, at this point, Barbara, do you live a subsistence lifestyle? Your agriculture is, are you, you know, self-sufficient on that, or do you still kind of buy things and trade with other people?
Oh, I buy things and trade with other people, and I'm working, because it doesn't happen overnight. If I had Bill Gates's millions or billions or whatever he has, you know, then I could go ahead and go wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and have everything in a self-sufficient bubble, and that would be wonderful. But most people don't, and I certainly don't. So I'm working at it one step at a time. Now I'm still going to the store for things like rice, oats, things like that. But as far as my milk, I'm milking my goat. I have to buy hay from the neighbor, but I'm milking my goat. I've gotten organic kefir grains, and now I'm making kefir, and I have found that this is one of the major things I have found, and oh, it is so wonderful. Kefir grains love raw goat milk. They love it. They will grow like crazy. I don't know if you're familiar about what a kefir grain is.
No, I'm thinking about the kefir, the yogurt or whatever, but what is this? Kefir grains?
Well, it makes something like yogurt. It's a cultured thing. And kefir grains, if you get the real kefir grains, the real milk kefir grains, they actually started in long ago. I think they were from CACAUS, those mountains or something
the
like that.
Caucasus region, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that's where they originally came from. And they've just been passed down and passed down and passed down. And nobody really knows, you know. They're places that make them, but then you have to renew them. They go bad and you have to renew them. Well, these things, they're little grains, and they look like tiny little cauliflower rosette. They look like cottage cheese, really.
Mm.
And what you do, and they're a it's a fermentation process. They are a culture of yeast and bacteria, good bacteria. They're probiotic. You put them in your milk, and you, in a glass jar, no plastic glass, and
You're right. Of course, the BPA and everything else in there, it leaches into it. You don't want that.
Absolutely. And I put like a little coffee filter over it, you know, and put a band around it, and I stick it in my cupboard and leave it for 24 hours. It ferments the milk. And then I take it out, and if you leave it for 24 hours, you can leave it for longer. You can leave it for up to 48, but it's going to be a lot stronger and a lot thinner. And I then strain off the kefir grains and then just put them in another jar and put some more goat's milk in that and put it back in the cupboard. And now what I have is a very thick fermented goat's milk liquid. And it tastes exactly like unsweetened yogurt.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had it a couple of times. It's really good actually. Yeah.
And so this stuff is so good. And if you keep it in the refrigerator after you take the grains out of it for a little while, it'll actually thicken up to the point of being almost like a yogurt consistency. And I'll take this every single day. Every single day, I will take that kefir and I'll put it in a blender and I'll put in some fruit, like say pineapple, and then I love chia seeds, and I'll throw in some chia seeds and throw in some hemp oil and some honey from some local guy out here who has bees, and you know I get honey, and I'll put that in and blend that up until the chia seeds are all ground up in there, and then put it in the refrigerator. And that's what I have for breakfast. If I want a quick lunch, I'll have that, you know, for lunch. And I'm telling you, I used to have, you know, some stomach problems. I don't have any stomach problems anymore. It's absolutely wonderful. If you look up to find all of the vitamins and minerals that are in that, it's just amazing. And that's what I've been doing for the past several months. I experimented on myself again. And I said, can I live? Will a goat keep me alive? And I found out, yes, a goat will keep me alive. A goat and some kefir grains, and these kefir grains, they will last forever. As long as they're a living organism, and as long as you take care of them, you never, ever have to replace them. And I started out with 1.5 tablespoons of kefir grains. And now, I guess I've been doing it for 3 months, I have over 40 ounces of kefir grains, and I've already given away 20 ounces of them. They just keep multiplying and multiplying and multiplying. So you never run out. It's like the ultimate fast food. You know?
Right.
I don't go to McDonald's. I go in and, you know, get my kefir, because that is, you know, I've got so much more energy. It's like the ultimate health food. So if I don't have time to do, you know, something else, you know, whatever, I'll get my kefir grains. We've got chickens. And they run around all over the place here, so we have fresh eggs. During the beginning of the year, we also have fresh goose eggs. I'm basically a vegetarian because I don't have the heart to kill a creature just to eat it. You know, it's not in me. If an animal is hurting another animal, then I do not have a problem, you know, dealing with that. But for me just to say, oh, I'm just going to go out and kill something and eat the meat, I'm not going to do that, because I know that I can get my nutrition by keeping the animal alive and healthy and just getting the stuff that they give me, the milk, the eggs. And then we have garden, and we get most of the vegetables from the garden. So for myself, if I was going to, right now, I'm working to the point where I want to be when this whole system crashes, and it's inevitable, it's going to have to crash. We can't keep doing what we're doing because it's just not sustainable. When that happens, I want to be able to close my gate and say, okay, I am still going to survive here because I have the food that I need. I have the water that I need, and that's it. Now, the way I see it is, everybody's at a different stage. Everybody's at a different level. And when the closer to the bottom you are, the easier the fall is. So actually, the people that people out here aren't rich. Where I'm at, most people out here, you know, really aren't. There's the big ranchers that have a whole lot of land, a whole lot of money, and then there's us. You know, the people that are surviving have learned how to survive on very, very little. We spent several years living off of $100 to $120 a month budget for food. That was it.
Yeah.
So we basically had to learn how to, you know, get a lot of our food right off the land, right from the animals, and to grow it. And at this point, we're not at that level yet to where we could, you know, completely say, okay, we don't need anything, but we're closer than a whole lot of other people are. And we're closer than we were several years ago. And that's the goal. The goal is to get, you know, self-sufficient to the point where, you know, you're not going to die if you can't get to Walmart.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's true. And I get what you're getting at. Some people are, you know, very high up there in terms of the disconnection between the earth. They live up in a tower. Their feet never touch the ground, literally. You know, in some cases, they walk with shoes. Very, very far removed from the natural processes of everything that it actually takes to survive. And as I said before, certainly we have specialization, and you can trade and barter with other people. So necessarily, you don't have to know how to do everything yourself. But as you say, I mean, and this is something we've talked about before as well on the program, that if something is to occur in terms of a big enough solar flare, a big enough catastrophe, a, you know, big enough problem when it comes to the GMO seeds and the Terminator technology in itself, there are a lot of people that are going to suffer a great anguish and torment because of the fact that they don't know how to survive. They don't know it. And it's kind of scary when you think about it. It's like we've lost that connection a little bit. So I'm really encouraged to hear and see when people are actually trying to reach back, if you will, a little bit into history and kind of see, okay, how did we used to live, because we made it for millions of years, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, and here we are, you know. So it's very important not to lose that connectivity, I think.
Absolutely. You know, and the thing is that the agribusiness model that we have been pushed into, basically, makes its money off of us being disconnected. It makes its money off of us not knowing where our food's coming from, mm-hmm. and not caring.
Yeah.
So if we get, you know, food from China, well, it's food. Just eat it.
Radiated garlics and, you know, yeah. All the good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. if it's straight out of a lab, then, oh, hey, but there's another dynamic that enters in there, that there's people that don't know and that need to know, that are being pulled in the opposite direction, where I've actually read stuff that says, oh, organic is bad for you. Organic is dirty. It's full of germs. And the stuff in the lab, oh, that's more healthy because we have control. And, you know, that's the issue, isn't it? You know?
Control. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Control. Yeah. I mean, I saw some of these, the documentaries there as well about the, well, we've talked about the seed vault for you know, many years in that regard, but there's many seed vaults around the globe, actually, that gathers, collects, and stores these, you know, good, healthy, genetically diverse seeds, basically, as opposed to what's being, you know, sold and planted right now, which is a very, you know, weak genetically seed, really, but maybe it's geared towards a certain condition. But if something changes a little bit, if the humidity change, if there's more drought, less whatever, then the survival rate of these genetically non-diverse seeds is basically going to fail, which is very dangerous. But I did see when they're doing some of these laboratory experiments deep underground with the genetic seeds, and it's just seeing those kind of in what environment they do this, and in the laboratory conditions, I just like, that is not food, whatever that is. It never touched the earth. It's like completely removed from it, and I don't think that's going to go down very well if that's the way that the majority of human food production is going to go, you know.
But it's sterile, don't you know?
Exactly. No germs, no nothing on there. Well, there's no vitamins, no minerals either. That's the point.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the thing is, the disconnect is so... Look at the school lunches, okay? I mean, look at these school lunches, would you? And have you seen where some states are actually saying that the parents cannot give their children a lunch from home.
Yeah, that's right. I saw this. I forget what town or state it was in, but yeah, they had this suggestion now that they only should eat from the school cafeteria, right? So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, and look at the cafeteria. These are the same cafeterias that are saying it's okay to put aspartame in children's chocolate milk.
Yeah, yeah.
It's healthy. Yeah, and these are the same people that are saying, okay, well, it's kind of another subject, but go ahead and let's jab hepatitis B vaccine into your child when it's born.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And that's genetically modified.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's not sane. It's not rational. And the more people that can, you know, whatever means, can wake up to this fact and start taking responsibility. And I think that's the key, is learning to take responsibility for your own food choices and not giving that responsibility over to the likes of Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta, BASF. You know, we don't need to do that. We need to take responsibility for ourselves. And, you know, and I was talking with someone the other day about marketing. And marketing in itself is not bad. Okay. Marketing, everything is marketing. Okay. Mm. When I choose the clothes that I wear and I put my hair a certain way, it's marketing.
Yep. Okay. That's right.
And that's what it is. There's marketing used to benefit, and there's marketing used to manipulate. And when marketers put things on labels saying all natural, and you know what it is, it came straight out of a laboratory, what does all natural mean? They're changing the meanings of words, and it's all legal. It's all good marketing, because corporations, I took 4 years and went to college and got a degree in business. And one of the classes was in ethics. And one of the things that you specifically pulled away from that class is ethics are optional.
Right.
There is no requirement for a business to have ethics. Now, what is beneficial for the business is to appear to have ethics. So this is why you get a completely unethical company, such as Monsanto, that can use the marketing campaign of we're feeding the world with GMOs when it's a complete fraud. And it can't be proven. One, you know, well, we're feeding the world. It doesn't say how much of the world we're feeding. You know, it's just a vague marketing term. And it's very legal for them to do that. And then they go up and they're putting themselves up as this benevolent company, and they'll probably invest in this and that and whatever that looks good, appears to be good on the surface, just to show people that, oh, they're this wonderful, benevolent company. Well, meanwhile, what they're doing that appears to be ethical has no ethics involved in it whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's basically for the bottom line. It's a marketing scam.
Yeah. They know with all the information flow now that you need to have a good, public relations image out there. And I mean, you're right. They just put words together just because the label or the bottle, the container, whatever says organic or green or, you know, all natural, whatever, that doesn't mean anything. It's just empty words. Again, that's why it's so important to check what is the source of it. Check the, you know, turn the product around and check the label, you know, and if it has more than, I'd say, 3 or 5 ingredients, you wouldn't want to touch it, really, you know.
Yeah, you know, you got to figure out what's going to be put in your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I'm just going to take this and I'm going to eat it. Look at candy. Okay. One of my nice little projects now is making candy. Okay. When I say candy, what do you think?
Well,
I think unhealthy.
Yeah. I think some sugary preservatives and color agents and everything else in there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, right now I'm making health candy. All right. So this is my two little what successful ones now are I'm making peanut butter fudge. So this is what I do. Peanut butter fudge. Now, when you think peanut butter fudge, it's like, oh my goodness, sugar and this and that and the other. Oh boy. It's not. You know, you can make a simple peanut butter fudge by using chunky peanut butter, organic, extra virgin coconut oil. And the brand that I use, I don't know if you want me to say a brand or not.
Oh, it's okay. No, of course you can.
Okay, I use Nutiva because I have, gone and found out what the company actually stands for and what they, I do my research on the companies. I really go company specific when I get something. And I use the coconut oil and the honey. That's it. That is, oh, and a little bit of hemp oil.
Yeah.
For health, and I put the coconut oil because the coconut oil is really good for you. And then I stir the coconut oil, the peanut butter, until it's, liquid. And that's it. No more heat than that. Just to get it liquid. Very low temperature will melt it. And then I stir in the peanut butter and the hemp oil. And then I take that mixture and I put it in an ice cube tray and I stick it in the freezer for a few minutes, and then I take it out and I pop it out of the freezer things, and it's in the shape of a piece of fudge, and I put it in the refrigerator, and it's fudge. It's the same consistency as fudge, and it's delicious, and it's healthy. Now that is candy. That because I can't eat candy out of the store, I'll break out in those hor that horrible rash. I just
Yeah.
can't do it. Even if I wanted to cheat, I couldn't do it. And so I have candy like that. And then I do my little coconut thing. I got shredded coconut. And I mix that with honey and coconut oil. And I go ahead and do the same thing with that. My next step is going to be getting organic cocoa paste, that no sweetener. And using that and sweetening it with honey and making a chocolate shell over coconut oil, and I think I'll get some peppermint oil or whatever, and making something like a York's peppermint patty. So there are ways to do this. And the only reason all of this stuff is unhealthy is because of agribusiness. It's because of the multinational corporations that want to make a buck. And this stuff that I'm using, if they did all that, then they wouldn't be able to make as much money because they have to use all these fillers, all this cheap stuff, all of this garbage that now has turned something that normally was healthy into something bad and something that'll rot your teeth. My candy will actually make me healthier. So,
Yeah. No,
where are we going with this?
it's great because you know what's in there. You have a perception about the level of, I mean, I can't believe how much sugar there is in everything as well. I mean, if you try something of this and that, it's so sweet, it's like it hurts you, just tasting some of this stuff out there. And I mean, we do the same, Lana and I. We make our own chocolate chip cookies with almond flour, and we source, so we get the good chocolate, and we use the coconut oil as well, and we sweeten it either with the there's coconut sugar. There's something called oh, what is it called again? Another kind of a fruit-based sweetener. But no, there are options
Stevia.
out. No, not stevia. There's
No?
actually another one, erythritol. That's right, which is pretty interesting. I haven't heard too much bad press of it actually yet. So I hope there's going to do some more research on that. But nonetheless, the idea there is that there's tons of options and there's tons of things to do in terms of getting, control over what you eat and on what you put in there. But one of the things you brought up, I want to ask you a little bit more about, is the idea as well that you'd think that these companies who produce this garbage, frankly, which is not food, it's garbage, that they would stand and fall on the market, because people, if they were paying attention soon enough, they would realize that this is not there's no good stuff. That's why we see a resurgence of, real food and stores that actually are catering to those people who are, turning the bottle and looking what's inside of it. But nonetheless, there's government subsidies. We see the connections between government and these corporations, hand in glove kind of relationships. And so we're not in a place where people's, where they can vote with their dollar, because the government is there kind of supporting this artificial structure that has been built up, which is one of the main problems as I see it as well. Because people, again, if they took that responsibility and realized that, okay, if it's my responsibility to make sure it's a good product in that regard, and if it's not, don't buy from that company, don't support them, and they would naturally fall. But that's not the case, right?
Well, yeah. At this point, one of the reasons, I believe, is because of the marketing subterfuge, and that's exactly what it is. And when you have a corrupt, prime example, USDA. The USDA promotes GMOs wherever it can. The USDA is responsible for the agribusiness model. And we've got the FDA with the labeling issue, and there's more hidden under a label than the labeling actually, the information that it actually gives you.
Yeah.
There's more hidden behind a label. And these... So what we have is this huge model. It's been forced upon us. Okay, the disconnect has been created, artificially created, to where we really don't know what they're doing. We're starting to become a little bit more aware. There's so many people that are starting to talk. Most of the bigger guys that are making a whole lot of money selling USDA organic and all this stuff, they make their money selling it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, the USDA organic, let me ask you a question. How can an agency that is responsible for flooding the market with genetically modified organisms and pesticides and the agribusiness monoculture model, how can that agency be trusted to safeguard organics?
It can't, and it doesn't. It's as simple as that. And that's why people, I mean, I don't understand why people, or the companies actually, why they go and seek this FDA organically approved stamp, because it costs them tons of money, the red tape and everything else. I mean, if you look at a company and if you can see what they're doing, if they're open about their measure of how they produce things, either if that's meaning you look online, or even better, maybe you can even go there and take a look if they allow tours and whatnot. And if you see that it's in a good way, and if they say it's organic, but it's not FDA approved organic, that's good enough for me,
Me too. Me too. And, there's more, we are getting some headway. We really are, because when Monsanto says that it is now going to be developing non-GMO seeds, and they're going to be targeting the organic market, then some headway is being made.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you buy a Monsanto organic apple?
No, thank you. No, thank you. No, I mean, we linked up the story a while back. I think it was a Canadian who worked within FDA, within the branch of organic, food or the labeling rather. And I can link up that video again, because he just shows the flip side of it. And he did talk about the marketing purpose. He said how huge the industry of organic labeling is these days. And that's what a lot of these companies are trying to cater to. But is it really good? Is it really, organic? And how many percent of the ingredients in these products are really organic? There's tons of loopholes in there. And the fact that they, again, try to cater to this green organic thing doesn't make it so. It's just a marketing gimmick,
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we're laboring under. And, is a huge marketing. It's almost like we're living in this gigantic illusion that's been created for us. And television supports it. When I was a kid, I'm in my 60s. And when I was a kid, we had this little black and white television. And I was watching it and watching it. And then commercial came on. And this gal, I think it was deodorant or something, she says, "Oh, this is the best deodorant, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Hey, Mom," I said, "Really? Is that true?" And she said, "No." And I said, "Well, does, if the gal's on television and she's, you know, saying that she use, and she's saying she's using it and she loves it, I mean, is she lying?" And my mom said, "You can't believe that. You can't believe anything on television. It's just television." But that's the thing. They're getting paid to lie. And I'm sorry, you know, actors, I don't care. You know, actors are actors. Actors are good people. It's a job. But, you know, to get paid to lie. Basically, you know, they'll get paid to say anything, and that's money and it's a paycheck. So now when people look at television, they think whatever comes out of that tube is the truth. Back then we knew that, no, that's not true. That's obviously a lie. And no, now that now people look at television and they're glued to the tube, and they think that whatever comes across that tube is the truth, that the news programs that come across there is 100% truth. Oh, they'd never lie. The commercials, oh, they'd never lie because they're not allowed to. And it's all a big, huge illusion. And it's difficult for people to break through. But I think a lot of times what it takes is it takes a an event in a person's life, like the event in my life about the GMOs. It took that event to get me out of the corporate garbage food track. You know, it took that event to wake me up. So, you know, a lot of times that's what it takes. Most times that's what it takes. As soon as it becomes personal, then it becomes important. If it doesn't become personal and it doesn't affect you, then normally it's very easy to just go ahead and put it on the back burner and not really think about it too much. Well, I've been doing this for, you know, 20 years. I'm not going to change now. You know, that's easy to do. And that's what the marketers count on. That's what the Monsantos of the world and the Nestles of the world count on.
Yeah.
Is for us to maintain, just to maintain the ignorance.
That's absolutely right. Now, there's a couple of things here, or I guess one primarily here that we can talk more about here before we take a break in 5-10 minutes or so, and that is about the labeling issue. I wanted to squeeze that in here in the first segment here. And your stance on that, basically, because I think you have a really good point in terms of where the focus and the attention should go to. I mean, again, we haven't talked too much about the health issue overall in all the studies yet here so far, but we talked about your experiences, and again, for those who, you know, have been paying attention in the last few years, you know that there are massive problems and dangerous issues with GMOs. But so the big push for a while here has been about labeling. So if just as long as we can label it, that's good, because then we can choose if we want it or not. What's your take on this, Barbara?
Well, personally, I kind of go against the grain on that. I believe that labeling is a distraction. Knowing what I know about the labeling standards and how much is hidden behind labeling, it's a distraction at best. Go to a store. You look at the label. Can you understand half of what's on that label? No.
No. Well, today I can, actually, personally, because I've started looking into what actually is. Well, see, in Europe, we have these, we call them E numbers, which is they take away the actual name of the ingredient. And instead of saying, you know, natrium, you know, ticreet or something like that, it says E157. So you have to have this chart with you when you're out in the store to basically see. And then I have a no-no list. Like, okay, don't touch these, because some of them can actually be okay. It could just be citric acid, but it still says E148 or something like that. So that's how we do it there, which just makes things even more confusing, of course.
Oh, by the way, most citric acid is GMO.
Oh, is it? Okay, well, there you go.
Sorry.
Where does that come from then? Where do they, how do they produce that then?
I'm not quite sure. I did some reading up on it because I was very concerned. And the enzymes I think that they use to produce it are genetically modified.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so yeah, this is labeling for you, you know. And so what this is it, the labeling and the movement, the labeling movement has, you know, they're saying, okay, well, this is the theory. We'll go ahead and, like you said, we'll go ahead and get the labels on, then people will know it's genetically engineered, and then they will, you know, there'll be a huge groundswell, and people will stop buying it, and then we'll get rid of the GMOs. Okay. This is one of the reasons why that's not going to work. One of the reasons is, of course, that most people will just figure it's on the label, it's okay, and eat it anyway. But even in the EU, animals fed GMO corn, GMO soy for all of their lives, and then that meat and that milk and those eggs still can go into the food supply without being labeled.
Yep.
So if you have got all of this, and most of the GMOs being produced are for feed at this point, they're just starting to get into the food as far as the vegetables and all that. They're just starting to get into that for human consumption. So all of this food is all this feed, animal feed, is still being shipped over to the EU. And the animals are eating it. They've got labeling. The EU has labeling. What isn't being labeled? The animals. So is that addressing the growing issue of GMO contamination? Because if you continue to grow GMOs all over the place, and now they've got the new kind of GMOs that are bypassing all USD regulation. If you continue to grow GMOs, the contamination issue is going to be so widespread that you will not be even able to get an organic piece of corn without having it 1-3% at this point contaminated by genetically modified transgenes. Mm. You're not going to be able to do it. So you can have all the labeling in the world, and that's still not going to address the continuing contamination issue of growing those GMOs. It's just not going to touch it. What you're going to have is a label slapped on. Now, it's a completely false Band-Aid. It's false opposition, in my opinion. Now, Monsanto's jumping up and down. We don't want it. We don't want it yet. Oh, they took it off of the website, but Monsanto did have a blurb on its EU website saying how it supported labeling in the EU. Well, how can it support labeling in the EU? And it's against labeling here because it's marketing. This is what they are doing. They're saying in the EU, oh, well, since you guys want it labeled anyway, well, yeah, we support labeling because it doesn't matter if it's labeled because you can hide so much in a label. Now they're saying over here, well, we don't want it. We don't want it. We don't want it because they want anything but a ban. So if they put up this huge fight and get us all, you know, concentrated on the labeling, and they say, then finally, if we do manage to get it labeled, and they say, oh, okay, well, yeah, we agree, then we're going to be the good guys and now get it labeled. It means nothing because they're still selling the farmers sacks and sacks and sacks of GMO feed. The farmers are still getting under the technology use agreement. They're still, you know, not being able to replant their seed, which is probably for GMO a good thing because we don't want it out here.
Yeah.
But it's still continuing. The cycle is still continuing, and it has not addressed the root cause. And the root cause is the planting of the GMO seed. Look at Jackson County, Oregon. Jackson County is in the fight of its life. Jackson County is in the middle of a fight. They have got something on the ballot saying we want to ban GMOs in our county. They're in the middle of the sugar beet capital of the country. Jackson County has is near the Willamette Valley. The Willamette Valley has almost 100%, you know, it's like high 90s percentage of seeds for sugar beets that it ships to all over the country. And it's 100% GMO. All of their seeds are 100% GMO. Sugar beets.
Yep.
They make, so Jackson County is in the middle of it. So they're trying to go GM free. So this is what the state of Oregon did. The state of Oregon has said, we're going to reserve the right to regulate any agricultural product, seed, or whatever, to the state. The county doesn't have the right to do that. And they did that in the emergency session and passed that almost overnight so that no other county, because then Josephine County was getting ready to do the same thing and Benton County is getting ready to do the same thing. Josephine County said, you know what? Forget it. Jackson County got it on the ballot. Oregon State says, you can't do that. And Josephine County says, oh, yes, we can. So they go ahead and drafted their measure anyway. And Benton County is getting ready to do the same thing. And they're all in that, you know, that area where they're making all these, you know, all this GMO crops. They don't want it. So they're trying to make their counties GMO free. And they're fighting for their lives, their very lives. They're fighting for it. Now, do you hear much about that?
No.
What you hear is labeling. What you hear is labeling this, labeling that. You know, you heard about Hawaii banning GMOs. You hear about these other countries. You know, they put this ban, but it's sparse. It's sparse. And Hawaii, you know, major. I was very happy to see that. You know, the Big Island of Hawaii banned GMOs, but they weren't in the middle of a huge GMO manufacturing area. They don't produce a whole bunch, so it wasn't too bad. But when you get a county in the middle of a huge GMO belt, that's being squashed. Not only is it being squashed by Monsanto, but it's being squashed by certain people who are going off on the labeling binge and specifically ignoring Jackson County. Jackson County, those people are heroes. They should be spread all over the place. This should be Jackson County, support Jackson County on the front page, in my opinion, of every single alternative health site on the internet. But they're not. They can barely scrape up a few thousand dollars for their campaign, while the GMO industry has getting thousands upon thousands of dollars to squash them. And they're doing the fight right there. And they're fighting for their lives, and they're just being ignored from each and every single side.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. I want to ask you more about this whole situation after a break here when we return, Barbara. It's interesting how the debate in that regard has been hijacked, and of course it's a plan behind that, but also, you know, some ways out of this situation, and just continue to talk more about what actually can be done about this and some of the old you know, kind of individual options that we have as well. But before we take a break, just give us your website, the URL, and if you want to just mention quickly what people can find on the site, Barbara, and if there's anything else you want to you know, plug or share with our audience there.
Well, the site is farmwars.info. I also got farmwars.org, so either way, it'll show up at the same site. And I've got a lot of pretty heavy-hitting articles on there from some scientists. I've got several scientists backing my research. I don't post anything on there as far as, you know, GMOs that is not vetted by, you know, a scientist and can be proven in fact. So if you want to find out about GMOs, I've got Aggie, the Traveling Agrobacterium, on there, and that is a 36-slide show presentation, PowerPoint. And what it is is when I was first learning about GMOs, I got together with, you're probably familiar with this name, Dr. Arpad Pusztai.
Oh, sure, yeah.
His wife, Susan, and partner. And I got together with her, and she enlightened me about this whole process. And I put together the slideshow, and I posted it on the site. If you want to know about, you know, GMOs, there's a whole lot more than that, but it's kind of the basics. And just go on over there and look at Aggie. It was not. I put it on a kind of a another site that was more for educators and stuff, and it did get 8,000 hits in Bosnia. So I'm really happy about that. The U.S., not as many, but Bosnia, hey.
They're on it.
They're on it. And a lot of these smaller places understand they're more connected with the earth. They're more connected with the way things should be because they haven't had all of this industrialization, you know, that we have been inundated with all this garbage, and they can get a little more of a grip. So I'm really happy about that. It's the smaller guys that are going to do it.
All right. Well, very good. Farmwars.info. That's the website. Thanks for the first segment here, Barbara. Stay with us. We'll be back with more in a little bit. As we proceed in the second hour with Barbara Peterson, We talk about our stance on the GMO labeling issue and the proponents that seek to implement this and why it might not be such a good idea. We also talk about the individual solution against this onslaught on our food supply. Later, we discuss the cautionary principle within the EU in regards to the GMO question, but how we basically are slowly moving towards full implementation and full government approval of GMOs nonetheless. It's, in other words, a different path and a different pace, but the same location is the goal at the end, in other words. To continue to listen, sign up for a membership at redicemembers.com, and we'll continue our program there. We are, as you might know, free from commercial interruptions and ads on the websites. So our program is listener-supported, so if you like what we do and want to hear more, sign up and tune in to the over 800 programs that we have now and growing each week. We also have videos and films and commentaries and a whole lot more. We come to you 3 times per week. Every other week, one of those shows is usually Radio 314 with Lana. Next up on 314 is Keith Preston. After that, on Red Ice Radio, Karen Hudi is a former World Bank employee. Then we have David Icke and Daniel Estlin on after that. You're welcome to tune in again when we're back with more than in just a few days. But we'll proceed right now with Barbara Peterson at redicemembers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you there.